702.
Africa at a Glance.
So, Professor Evan Lieberman is a professor of political science and contemporary Africa at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And he's written a book entitled Until We Have 1 Hour Liberty, South Africa After Apartheid. And it was recently published, yeah? I think it was published in June of this year. And very interesting stuff. I mean, he opens with a first-hand account of the hard-fought 2019 national election and how it played out in Mogale City, a post-apartheid municipality created from black African townships and white Afrikaner suburbs. From this launching point, he examines the complexities of South Africa's multiracial society and the unprecedented democratic experiment that began with the election of Nelson Mandela in 1994. He joins me now on Zoom, Professor Evan Lieberman. Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to have the chance to talk with you.
So I was saying to the listeners that I'm really intrigued about this conversation because it really is a scientific look at us. We have opinions about what's happening in South Africa because of our lived experience. And at this moment in time, I can tell you right now, Professor Lieberman, we are not a happy bunch. We are undergoing all sorts of political eruptions. We are in the middle of what we call a power crisis, in that there is no real predictability as to one of our major economic indicators and drivers, and that's electricity. We are in a very, very difficult position. Our economy isn't operating as it should, and therefore not delivering all of the things that it ought to. And so the dream that was Nelson Mandela's South Africa is somewhat fading. But you seem to have a different opinion based on what we read in your book.
Yeah, I mean, look, I understand well what's going on in South Africa today. I visit the country often. I have lots of friends and colleagues there. And, you know, reading about stage six load shedding, you know, I get the frustrations. You know, I know for myself, if I have a blackout for 1 hour, I'm, you know, extremely frustrated and, you know, it just feels maddening. And so to think about all that South Africans are facing right now, it's really tough. But, you know, the book I wrote, I took from the perspective, really looking at what was and what could have been for South Africa. And, you know, and it's from that, those perspectives that things, you know, can look a lot better than they might from today, just looking at all the problems, and thinking about just how unhappy and conflictual your society was in so many just deeply troubling ways back in those times. And then to trace out, you know, how has this democracy worked? And again, there's no denying that there's so many things that the average South African, most South Africans face today that are upsetting. But I think there's also a lot to celebrate. And we shouldn't lose sight of that, both for South Africa and for the rest of the world.
What can South Africans celebrate right now?
Well, you know, if we look around the world, and I know that this is a hard sell, boy, there are problems and desperation everywhere, right? If we look at, you know, what's going on in Russia, if we look at what's going on in much of the rest of the African continent, frankly, if we look at what's going on in the United States, where I'm sitting right now, there's political turmoil, there's inflation, there's inequality. But let's think about some of the things that have gone right in South Africa over these 25 years. My book is about the first, you know, 25 years, but of course, a little bit of delay. So, you know, take it all the way up to the present. You know, one, and you know, the title of the book, Until We Have Won Our Liberty, you know, think about the Freedom Charter and the anti-apartheid struggle. You know, it was about getting a voice in politics. And, you know, your country has had a dozen free and fair elections, largely uncontested. No one has come in, and even within the country or outside the country, and said, "Nah, you guys aren't picking leaders in a fair way." You've really done it, and as a model of the world. That's one. Second, you have this constitution that protects all sorts of human rights in ways. Yours was a country in which people suffered such incredible indignities for hundreds of years. But, you have courts, a constitution, you have opportunities to uphold those rights. And there are so many examples of which those rights have been, really meaningfully upheld when they've been challenged by government or by others. There have been lots of examples in which the government has made a bad policy, and opposition politicians, civil society, journalists like yourself have come down and said, this isn't right. And, and the government's changed course and corrected action.
There's also like what?
Okay.
Dr. Lieberman?
Well, let's talk about the AIDS pandemic, right? South Africa came into the late 1980s and early 1990s with, one of the worst HIV and AIDS pandemics in the world, right? And not just South Africa, but the whole Southern African region, what was then called Swaziland, Botswana, Lesotho, all had really bad HIV epidemics. And, Nelson Mandela didn't do, frankly, for what a great president he was in many ways, didn't do a great job on HIV. Thabo Mbeki didn't do a great job on HIV, had lots of, pretty crazy ideas about what the policy should be. But you had all this mass action. You had, challenges to government by, again, in the press with civil actions. And now you guys have one of the world's best AIDS treatment programs in the world, with just millions of people who are on treatment. And that's an incredible accomplishment.
Give me a call, 011-883-0702. A different perspective, I suppose, from the prevailing sentiments in South Africa at the moment from Professor Evan Lieberman. And his book is Until We Have Won Our Liberty. And I thought it's important for us to have this conversation with the professor, because we might be we might be caught up in an inward-looking space at the moment because, we're hurting. We wish things could be different and so forth, and they're not, yeah? But what do you make of Professor Lieberman's analysis? One of the things that comes to my mind, Professor Lieberman, is this. It's almost like saying we just need to be thankful for being alive. Right. If the comparison is with the ineptitude and the political mismanagement of our neighbors and the tragedies that are taking place elsewhere, it's almost like saying to us that we should be thankful that we are not Zimbabwe, or we should be thankful that we are not whatever. And somebody might argue, we're not Zimbabwe. We're South Africa. We have our own aspirations, our own goals, our own expectations that have not been met by our government. And to say to us, you should be thankful that you're not in a worse off situation, and that in itself is an achievement, it goes down very hard, Prof.
I hear you. My point is not that you should feel that South Africans should feel thankful or grateful. Absolutely not. And in fact, I think that the frustration that South Africans feel is real, warranted, and it's important because it drives change. But I think the point that I'm making in the book really is about these democratic institutions. And because one of the things that I've heard from a lot of South Africans is they say, what we really need is a benevolent dictator to come and fix all this. Or what we really need is just to be more like China, and we would just get everything fixed.
In fact, we've even had other people that have said what we really need is a turn back to apartheid.
Absolutely. And And those are that's what I'm arguing against, okay? Because and it's, again, to really be clear, it's not that one should be thankful. It's that these democratic institutions that you all put in place are really a better alternative than all of those. So let's start with the turn to apartheid, because one of the things that I found pretty shocking when I first started doing my research, and I've been visiting South Africa since 1991. I've been coming there a long time. I started studying it while I was a university student and had a great opportunity to come visit. And I even ran into President Mandela in the airport in 1991. So I've had a lot of great experiences studying South Africa. And, you know, I've seen so much change. When I went to Mahale City in 2019, you know, I spoke with some, you know, all sorts of people, and some white folks there said to me, you know, things were better in the old days. And I kind of, you know, raised my eyebrows because I just thought, all right, well, you know, these are some white people who, you know, frankly, this was a town that wasn't really for the whites in that town really didn't want to end apartheid. And I thought, okay, they were attached to this old model. And I can understand at least if they thought their way of life was better then. And he said, but, you know, ask the black people around here, they'll tell you the same thing. And I thought, this guy's crazy. But, you know, I did a survey of residents there, and a full half of the people 40 and over, half of the black people in Mahale City said that life was better then. Life was better under apartheid. Now, I think all of us can look back with nostalgia and say, you know, things were easier. And when we look at the facts on the ground, in terms of quality of life, in terms of the opportunities for people, I just don't think it's true, right? I just don't think it's true. I think that that's looking back, and you know, a great historian, Jacob Delmini, wrote this book called Native Nostalgia, and he explains some of that. You know, I think there are reasons why people look back with those rose-colored glasses, but if we're really being honest, come on, you know, life was not better under apartheid. South Africa would not be better off if you went back to that.
Why do you say so? Why do you say so, Professor Liebman? And let me qualify my question.
Yep.
The intellectual sort of approach to that question is, it can't be, because we have laws now that have repealed segregation and oppression.
Right.
We don't have to walk around with passes anymore. We can live anywhere we want. We can study what we want. We can, and many would argue that you are speaking from the position of the fact that we now have opportunities for betterment of our lives. Some will then argue that the experience, though, is that those opportunities are inaccessible. And so the promise of those opportunities is never met. So it becomes merely a pedestrian academic exercise to tell me that things are better, when my experience is that even though I might have been a second, third class citizen, there was a predictability, there was food on the table, which there is none now, because I am left to the devices of the opportunities that are created by this democratic system that isn't working for me, because those opportunities are just too high for me to reach. Does that make sense? In other words, the idea that it is not as bad as it was under apartheid is intellectual and academic, not experiential. Whereas the experiential reality might not necessarily follow a particular rationale and logic, but that is the real lived experience. In other words, are we not denying the lived experience of South Africans who say, as bad sad as it is to say that it was better on under apartheid, it actually was. And I'm being told I can't feel that or say that or think that. Talk to me about that.
Look, of course, everyone is entitled to have their own views about how they want to live their lives and what feels comfortable to them and what's better or worse, right? It's not for me to tell you, yes, you should be happier under this condition than that condition. But when I look at the history of South Africa and I think about the millions of people, including lawyers and people who led comfortable, privileged lives in many ways as people of color in South Africa, who said, I don't care about all of this. If I need to live under the indignity of a second class or third class citizenship, it's not worth having those things, right? So I take that history seriously, so that we would look back and we think about all sorts of people who were able to lead, you know, a materially comfortable and predictable life.
Yeah.
And they just said, no way, this is not for me. I'm willing to give it all up because this just is, you know, I'm not being treated as a human. So that's an important piece of evidence for me. And, you know, what do I find in general? There are a couple of things I want to respond to what you said. I mean, one is for sure, there's a big share of the population for whom, you know, the post-apartheid dispensation, they haven't benefited, right? They haven't benefited yet. But that's not everybody, right? There's millions of people of color who have joined the ranks of the middle class, who are going to malls. They do have money to be able to buy things that they want. They are going to schools where they're learning things. The composition of the universities are completely transformed from what they once were. And so there are millions of South Africans whose lives really have changed compared to what prior generations were. But does that mean that everyone's life has gotten better? No, but wow, South Africa, you know, in the late 1980s was a place where 80% of the population was excluded. And now we're looking 3 decades later and wondering, has everyone gotten to the level of that privileged minority? And the answer is no. And you know, to me, that's not enough to say that democracy hasn't worked. It says, wow, you guys had a lot of really big problems and your democracy hasn't worked perfectly, but a lot of people have benefited and they've reclaimed their dignity from what was.
011-883-0702. Would love to hear your thoughts. Interesting perspective from Professor Evan Lieberman.
I know there's a lot of Liebenbergs in South Africa. So South Africans always confuse it, but I appreciate
my apologies.
That's all right.
Professor Evan Lieberman, who's the author of the book Until We Have Won Our Liberty, South Africa After Apartheid. And given the hurt we are going through at the moment, the frustration, the dream deferred, as it were, it is possible sometimes to miss some of the things that Professor Lieberman is talking about. Yeah. Perhaps this is a moment of reflection to say that, yeah, we might be disappointed in the fact that the dream that we had for South Africa hasn't been fulfilled. But we're not in as bad a situation as what we may think we are, suggests Professor Lieberman. Would that be fair? Is that what you're saying, Prof?
I think that that's part of it. I think that that's part of it. And I hear you, and I hear from other South Africans, you know, that that's no consolation. You know, someone recently said to me, if you told me that I should be, you know, glad that I'm, you know, married to someone I hate because I could be married to someone who wanted to kill me, you know, that's no consolation.
Yeah.
And You know, there are lots of ways in which an argument like this, you could say, come on, man, you're ridiculous. Like, you know, things are bad. But I do think that, again, if we go back to the question, you know, which is a serious question in the world today, is this thing we call democracy, is it a good way to solve the challenges we face as a society and as a diverse society? Well, you know, then you just got to look and say, well, would we have been better off if one person had come in and just told us what to do? And, you know, I guess my answer to that would be, how do you get to pick that person? What if that person had been Jacob Zuma and he got to be the person who picked everything for you for 30 years? What if the person had been Thabo Mbeki? You know, the thing that you guys as South Africans have been able to do is try and get the people who you don't like in office to get out of office. And you see this, you know, obviously the ANC has been in power since the beginning, but they've lost a lot of votes because people are unhappy. They should be running scared for the next national election. And then when we look at the local level, you know, things have really changed, right? That last election, we saw, you know, the ANC had its worst performance ever, and municipalities are being governed by, you know, different coalitions, and they may not be perfect, but they're trying hard, and you know, and we see a lot of changes. And again, some people will tell me, oh, there are no changes, but, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with the Askavalani Project, which is a, you know, a group of civil society actors that work in informal settlements and challenge governments to, you know, to deliver services to them. And on a daily basis, they're out there on Twitter and sharing data, sharing their experiences. They're not always successful, but wow, I've been tracking, they're successful a lot of the time. They're pressuring their governments. Look, we don't have toilets. We don't have, you know, water. We don't have refuse removed. They pressure their governments and the services get delivered. Not everywhere, but a lot of the times. And it's those tools of being, you know, active citizens, engaging local governments. I think it's underappreciated in the country. And again, I'm used to South Africans saying it doesn't work anywhere. Go look at Askavalani and you'll see that they're doing work that is making a difference.
I want to take a few voice notes that have come through, and I want to invite you to be part of this conversation and just engage with some of the thoughts that Professor Evan Lieberman is putting through. I'm hearing a lot of people say, sure, yeah, you know, Dr. Lieberman, we hear you. But I suppose what you are saying is great for analysis. Comparative analysis, and it's great, but again, the whole conversation goes back to the lived experience. I mean, I've just had a conversation in the previous hour with a political analyst who said to me that South Africa had perhaps the best infrastructure on the African continent, and that infrastructure is literally being dissolved through lack of maintenance, through lack of just ineptitude in government and all of those kinds of things, because of people that are just bad at governing. And not only is the pain that South Africans feeling because of the breakdown in infrastructure that is not only breaking down but rapidly declining, it's the commensurate lack or the growing poverty margins that we are seeing, while we watch helplessly as those who are supposed to govern us line their pockets with ill-gotten monies and wealth, right? And that the pain comes not only from the experience, but from the dream that once was, that has been desecrated. So it's not just a practical issue, but it's also an emotional, psychological, and spiritual issue that South Africans are pointing to say, yeah, the prof can show me some statistics if you are comparing this situation with apartheid.
but we are comparing it with what we dreamt of. That is our disappointment, because to compare things with apartheid would be the wrong comparison to make. But our comparison is with what we could have been, and the fact that it's not happening. And the more we look at the situation, it looks like it may never happen. Talk to me about that, Prof.
Yeah, look, I get the frustration, and you know, for some, you know, some people say, you know, South Africa is cursed by the high hopes of those, you know, of that honeymoon period, right? The country went from feeling hopeless, like where are things? How are we ever going to resolve this, you know, conflict between black and white? To wow, maybe we can do it, and we're going to be, you know, remarkably successful beyond our wildest beliefs, and then reality set in. And the reality, you know, can feel pretty grim for a lot of the country. I think the question is for South Africans, like, well, what do you do with that? And I think that, you know, you all have the power to keep, you know, pointing out the problems and frustrations with government in the press. You have the ability to form political parties, support parties that hopefully people will vote those who are not doing a good job out of office, and to keep providing oversight. I mean, citizens have got to say, we're not going to tolerate this anymore. And, you know, it is still ruled by the people. And so people have to use those tools. You know, I think it's got to be frustrating to learn that, you know, record numbers of young people are choosing not to register to vote, because you need those people to say, we want to be part of a solution, rather than simply being frustrated and, you know, give up to the idea that things are going to just keep getting worse. Because, you know, again, I think South Africa has shown that from a really miserable past, you were able to make things much, much better for a while. Things have gotten, you know, for sure bad again. And it's both what politicians, government leaders have done, but it's also the world, right? I mean, a lot of the problems that South Africa faced starting in 2009, when the economy, you know, went down, was because of the global economic collapse. So South Africa faced what countries around the world face. And in the past few years, you know, you've gotten whacked hard by COVID. Again, not the making of South Africa, but like places around the world, inflation, supply chain shortages, et cetera, have been a stress. But, you know, again, as an outsider's from an outsider's perspective, there have been a lot of examples over the past 30 years in which South Africans have come together and shown, you know, a remarkable ability to advance.
Yeah. Well, I want to take some of the voice notes. Can I take them now and then take a quick break and then take some calls that are coming in? Please give us a call and let us know what you think of what the prof has to say. Is this what we need to hear in order perhaps to give ourselves, to receive some perspective? Because, as I say, sometimes we are so deeply embedded in our own problems that we can't see the silver cloud, not just the dark lining. So I'm really hoping to hear what you've got to say. But here are some voice notes.
Hi, Aubrey, and hi, Professor. Well, I'd like to be specific. And when looking at the ANC now, it really makes me feel like apartheid was better, because now ANC, it shows that it was never there to liberate anyone. What it did, it gave us the freedom of movement and the freedom of speech, and that's it. But in actual fact, what they were looking for is the piece of the pie. It's like they say, okay, we accept that the white people took everything, but just give us something. So that's what's been happening all these years. They've been eating their pie and their peace and wasting and damaging all their state entities that they found in five-star condition. Now our kids are even passing with 30% at school. What is better about democracy now? What is better about the ANC?
But Obs, hi, good evening. Comrade, there might be certain things that may have seemed better under apartheid in terms of the predictability that you make mention of. Oh, this is a horror. No, it's a horror. At the certain time, you get food, whether it's just beans and whatever and whatever. It does not negate the fact that there was oppression against a race because of the color of their skin. Oppression in the sense of economic freedom was very limited to what that system allowed you to access. So as much as democracy, we are not getting it properly. Because that's what everyone wants to look at us as one black nation. As one black nation, even though we are not one black nation, because there's so many different parties within democracy. But it's so unfair to say that during the times where police dogs, German shepherds, Malinois, they also call them, were sent out at random. They send them at random. Hey, and you want to tell me that that's better? There's no way. I cannot agree with that.
Hi, good evening, Aubrey. I agree with Professor Liebenberg completely. I think that, as South Africans, we are so pessimistic about our country. But the moment you travel out of the country, if you go to the United States, if you experience the democracy there, you'll see that there is so much of caveats that they actually don't have the kind of free speech in many ways that we do. If you go to Europe, if you look at the economy there, they are struggling with high inflation, as they are in the United States, as they are in Britain. There is so many things that is going wrong in those countries that we don't know about, and we don't appreciate. Even expatriates who go overseas to make a living there, it's not that easy. The grass is not greener on the other side. And our constitution is one of the most sophisticated, brilliant instruments that we have. And I don't think we actually appreciate our country as much as we really should. Also, it is definitely not... apartheid was definitely not better. Apartheid was another country. It was so bad. Only those who actually lived through it, we have now forgotten how terrible it was, but we were so constrained, we were so oppressed as black people. We cannot compare the country today to what it was then. It is completely different country.
702 Africa at a glance.
10 minutes to 11 o'clock. My guest is Professor Evan Lieberman, the author of the book Until We Have Won Our Liberty, South Africa After Apartheid. And some compelling arguments makes Professor Lieberman. And I suppose it depends on what you are comparing now with. Yeah? Prof, I just want to finish this thought to sort of provoke our listeners to join. I suppose for you, it's depends on what you're comparing it with. If you're comparing it with the past, I suppose then you are looking at apartheid. If you're comparing it with a dream, then I suppose you're comparing it with the aspirations that we had for the new dispensation. And I suppose whatever you compare it with is going to determine what you think about the present moment. Yeah? Lots of you talking about the fact that, yes, we're not doing so well as far as the practicing of democracy and so forth. But perhaps we do need to have the kind of perspective that Professor Lieberman is giving us. Yeah. And then there are those of you who are saying that it's not right for us to be told how to feel. As politically incorrect as it is to say things were better under apartheid, that's how I feel. So don't tell me I can't feel that, says somebody. I'm interested to take your calls, though, on 011-883-0702. I think for me, the issue is, to what do you compare the present? Is it based on a comparison with the past, and that would have been apartheid, or based on a comparison with what was promised, or based on a comparison with what you aspire to? Yeah? Professor Lieberman?
I mean, it's a great point. And each day when we wake up, you know, we can think about how we're doing. Someone asks you, you know, how you're doing, and you know, it can be compared to how I felt yesterday, or compared to when I was, you know, a young man and I had a lot more energy. And I think that any of those are fair comparisons, and it's fair for everyone to say, look, these are what our dreams and expectations were, and we're disappointed. But, you know, what I worry about is what do you do with those conclusions when you, if you constantly say, this is what we expected and we hope for, maybe it was unreasonable, but this is what we expected, and now we're really disappointed and we're just angry. If that paralyzes people from taking positive action as citizens to participate and continue to build the country, because they just are mired in disappointment. And, you know, I think that that's not as productive as citizens can be. And I think that if one takes a fair look at South Africa, both compared to the past, compared to other countries in Africa, compared to other countries like Brazil or India, or, you know, other countries in Latin America that are more kind of upper middle income countries like South Africa is, from any of those perspectives, there are a lot of things that have gone right in South Africa.
Edo,
not all, yep, but a lot. Sure.
Edo says, hi, Orbs. Prof suggests that dignity supersedes crime, jobs, blackouts, etc. He should clean his glasses and should not cherry pick issues, as the majority of us do not share his views, says Addo. I want to go to the lines now and hear what the listeners who've called in have to say. Makosa Zane is in Randburg. Good evening to you, ma'am.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I would like to say, while there's so much that we have got from democracy, but they still very much exclusion of the South African black people. For an example, they're very much excluded in the job market. They're not preferred. So they've got no opportunity. Secondly, sometimes this exclusion that prevails in apartheid times is still prevailing. Sometimes they exclude each other as black people. And lastly, it's very difficult as a South African black people. So it's not as grim as that to do business, because there's also exclusion. Not easy to get finance.
Yeah.
Still the same.
All right. Makosa Zane in Randburg. Ben is in the Vaal. Hi, Ben.
How are you, Albert?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, Ben. What's on your mind?
I'm fine, thanks. Hey, bro, I'd like to give a bit to these people who whoever thinks maybe apartheid was better, it wasn't. Believe me, I've lived on apartheid in those early years of the 80s. I was born in 1972. You know, things were so bad, you know, really bad, that when we were from school, these kids, they were waiting for us in the park every day, and they would chase us with bicycles. And when we run into the bushes, their elder brothers will be waiting with horses. So we had nowhere to go, whereby we would go get home and tell our father. And then our father was working for this guy. He was from England. In the morning, he would go and tell this other white man that his kids are really giving us a hard time. So it was really bad, really, not a bit. And then when Mr. Mandela was released from jail in 1990, it was like 18 years, I think, 18 years. So we were all so happy for him to be out of jail. But I can tell you now, I'm disappointed in the state of the country now. But with that said, I still think the present Democratic, it's so good. It has done well for us, despite all this shenanigans that is happening in the country now. But I wouldn't want to go back to the apartheid system. It was really bad for us. At least under that. And
Ben,
I don't want to speak to that.
Ben in the Val, much appreciated. There was a march yesterday by one of our trade unions. I think it's Pop Crew. And one of the things that they said was, even apartheid didn't treat us this badly. And I wonder whether a comment like that is a nostalgia to apartheid or an indictment on the present government to say that we are now having to be reduced to even comparing you to apartheid. Like for you to compare, I mean, to comment on that. But listen to this message. Matumbe on Twitter says, the comparison is not really about apartheid, says Matumbe. It is about a different and more easy to understand, simpler time. Now we have all the legacy problems of apartheid, plus globalization, plus trade issues, plus corruption. So it's more complicated and a lot harder. And a lot harder times, says Matumbe. What about that perspective, Prof?
Fair enough. I mean, so many things have changed for all of us, including all the information we get on social media, right? And which constantly reports to us bad news and makes us feel badly about things. And I think that's, you know, true all around the world. I think for your callers who express that frustration, all I could say is, you know, I hear them and I see them and I understand that perspective, and don't they appreciate, you know, to a certain extent compared to in other places, you know, certain other places in Africa or in China, where just simply expressing their frustrations would be considered illegal. And they might get detained simply for being able to have that freedom to share their discontent. And, you know, to me, you know, again, when I think back about the millions of people who were freedom fighters in South Africa, they wanted that freedom. And today you have it.
Yeah, yeah. So somebody said to me once that we wanted freedom and we got democracy. And a lot of people in South Africa are saying that, you know, the democratic dispensation is desirable if you have the means to live up to it, to access its opportunities. But what democracy did for South Africa and many South Africans is that it gave us the opportunities and not the means to access that opportunity. And therefore, it was nothing more than a ruse. And for that reason, we are more disappointed in the democratic order than we were with the apartheid order, because we understood what to expect from the apartheid democratic disorder. We got a kick in the ass and we expected it and we understood it. But here we thought we were going to get freedom and we got democracy. And democracy is the biggest lie that we've ever had to contend with. Prof?
Well, you know, I can understand people saying that, but Do you think that people would really rather just be told what to do each day and say, you know, I'm gonna throw you, you know, a little bit more food and a little bit more water and you know, slightly, you know, and a better guarantee for electricity, but I'm gonna tell you what you need to do each day, what you need to say, and you should say yes, sir, yes, ma'am, to people of a different race or ethnicity because they're the ones who are in charge. I just don't believe it. You know, I just don't believe that South Africans, if you put them into that situation, that's really what they would prefer, because that's a that's a life that's proven to be, you know, absolutely unacceptable because it's just you know, not the way humans should be treated. So I think in frustration and anger, you know, which is understandable, people say those things. But let me ask you, you know, what do you think the model is that would have worked? What kind of government might have worked, or is there a place in the world where South Africans are thinking, if, you know, this is how we think things could or should have been?
The easy answer, you know, the easy answer as we close, Prof, is I don't know, right? That's the easy answer. But the responsibility I have to that question is to say, perhaps we underestimate the level of slavery that we imbibed and the level of comfort in that slavery that we accepted, because we understood it to be the norm, because we were so insulated from the rest of the world. And perhaps the freedoms that we have received needed a population that was less insulated, more educated, more willing to take on the responsibilities of freedom than what we had become here in South Africa. So I know that that's not a satisfactory answer, but you asked me, and that is my answer. I want to thank you, Prof, for agreeing to talk to me, and I hope that we get a chance to talk again.
Me too. I really appreciate it. Thanks to you and to your listeners for chatting today.
Much appreciated. Professor Evan Lieberman, Until We Have Won Our Liberty is the name of his book.